I genuinely believe that what is yet to come can and should be better than before. But we do have to break down the current narrative in order to let that happen. The process of aging does not have to be downhill. I was stronger, fitter, and more capable in my 50s than I was in my 40s. So why can't I be even more so in my 60s, 70s, and beyond? Who's to say we can't or shouldn't change the way we age? A common thread among those of us considered more mature by society, frankly a euphemism for being past it, is of losing our identities, of becoming invisible, feeling useless and worthless, a sense of redundancy no longer needed by growing children, perhaps overtaken on the career ladder or abandoned by spouses trading us in for younger models. It enrages me to see midlife women so often cast aside, considered unattractive, unworthy, or unproductive, as their conventional beauty fades and declining hormones mean they are no longer usefully procreative, but also disadvantaged by weakened brains, bodies, and bones. It's tragic that at a time when we've given so much of our lives to others and finally have more time for ourselves, our bodies decide to take a downward turn and start letting us down. But there are many things we can do about this, as you'll read. Well, that's me, Liz Earle, reading from my new book, A Better Second Half. And this is the Liz Earle Wellbeing Show, the podcast helping us all have a better second half by investing in our health and our well-being today. Yes, across my books, website, social media, and this podcast, it is my mission to find ways for all of us to thrive in later life by investing in our health and our well-being today. Well, last week I chatted to Midpoint presenter and broadcaster Gabby Logan about epigenetics, healthy fats, midlife sex, and more. And today it's your turn to ask the questions. You've been emailing and sending voice notes asking about midlife weight gain, about supplements, about motivation, beauty routines, and relationships, all the sorts of things that I've been researching for my new book, A Better Second Half, which is out now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Okay, so let's start with a subject that I get so many questions about, that creeping midlife weight gain. Here is Sue.
I'm 60 this year and starting to feel fat and old, something that has come as a bit of a shock to me. I've always looked after myself, but I've noticed over the last year that the weight is starting to really gather. I've probably put on around a stone. I eat healthily, the odd treat, but nothing excessive. I only drink at the weekend, but certainly no more than 2 glasses. I'm a bit of a lightweight. Each week, I'll do 2 or maybe 3 one-hour gym sessions, which include weights, and 3 Pilates classes, and I try to walk every day, but nothing seems to be happening. A personal trainer, unfortunately, is out due to cost. I'm not obese, I'm not hugely overweight, but I'm 10 stone 5, and I'd like to get down to my comfortable weight of 9 stone 7. I'd like to know how to lose weight sensibly and carefully so that I don't damage myself.
Oh, Sue, that so resonates to me, that feeling of fat and old. Yeah, it can come as a bit of a shock, can't it? Okay, the first thing I would say is don't always be despondent about the reading on the scales. Because one of the things that I've learned is that I am heavier now, probably than I've been for a long, long time. But I don't get depressed about it because I'm musclier. And it sounds like you're doing a lot. You know, you're weight training, you're doing your Pilates, you're walking, all resistance, load-bearing exercises. And the chances are you are developing muscle, and that muscle is weighing more than fat. So your scales will register as more. So I think it's more important actually to go with what the tape measure is showing. Look at your waist measurement, for example, and be guided by that. But there are also a couple of pointers that I can give you here that if you do feel that you are putting on pounds of fat rather than pounds of muscle, that can be helpful. I think the first thing is to really prioritize protein. And I talk a lot about this in the book, actually. You know, it is sugar and the carbs that are the bad guys here. It used to be thought that it was fat that made us fat. Sounds sensible, doesn't it? Stands to reason, but actually no, it's sugar and the glucose response that's laying down our fat stores. So we need more protein as we age. That is something to prioritize. So what I do is I make sure that I put protein on my plate first before anything else. And then I build food around that. Make sure that you are staying hydrated. You say that you don't excessively snack. I would say ideally don't eat anything in between meals if you can help it. And that's really important to rest the gut. And that can help with the growth of a good beneficial bacteria called Akkermansia. And Akkermansia is a bacteria form that we find more in slim people or people who are a healthy weight. So if you want to encourage your Akkermansia, make sure that you have a good gap between meals. And that does actually mean not snacking. You can have herb teas, black tea, coffee, lots of water, obviously, or electrolytes to keep up your hydration, but nothing actually that's going to get your digestive system going. So there's also a real science behind this for midlife weight gain, because it is a time when our metabolism changes, when it slows, and a lot of this is driven from hormonal changes. So lowering levels of estrogen can dramatically affect weight loss or weight gain. And you don't say whether you're taking replacement estrogen with HRT, but many women do find that if they do replace their estrogen, that this helps with the fat disposition, because we tend to lay down less fat stores, particularly around the middle. You know, that well-known muffin top scenario is a very real thing in midlife, and that is often driven by hormonal changes because our disposition of fat shifts. And we tend to store more fat around the middle, which is one of the reasons why we become more susceptible to heart disease, for example. We know that that layer of visceral fat is not very healthy. So again, estrogen replacement can be something that is super helpful in terms of weight regulation as we age, and can also give us a bit more energy and a bit more of our mojo back to actually want to make us do even more in the gym or exercising generally. You definitely don't need to have a PT, by the way, a personal trainer. It is something that you can do very easily on your own at home. And I, for example, will do squats literally at the end of my bed. I bought a set of dumbbells I keep in my bedroom that I do bicep curls with, or weighted squats. You'll actually find a whole section on LizarWellbeing.com website going through the exercises that I do, really simple movements. And there are so many free resources now online. If you hop onto YouTube, you can find so many trainers giving exercise classes using resistance bands or just body weight, or doing things like yoga, Pilates, free of charge online. So you absolutely don't need to have a PT. Having said that, if you're starting out, then it might be an idea to get into your local gym. Most gyms will offer a free initial personal training session just to give you some guidance and maybe give you a little bit of extra motivation, or you might want to pay just for one or two sessions to get you going. But generally, you don't need to pay for a professional. Sticking with diet then, and this is Claire.
I just have a question for you regarding meat. My 25-year-old daughter became vegan about a year ago following watching some documentaries on Netflix and reading about Blue Zones and other things. And she's tried to convince me and her dad to go down the same path. However, we don't want to. We would rather stick to meat eating. We try and choose grass-fed, good quality meat where we can. But I just wondered if there's any guidelines on how often it's reasonable to eat meat in terms of health. When moving forward, we are trying to look after ourselves as we age, really. And is there any particular meats we should avoid? I obviously don't eat processed meat at all, but anything like that you could advise on as well, please? Thank you.
This is such a good question, Claire. And I guess trigger warning, I'm probably going to upset a few people with my answer, but there is no good reason to stop eating meat. In fact, I think meat is very beneficial. I think it's a superfood, but it does come down to the type of meat, because not all meat is created equal. You're absolutely doing the right thing in not eating processed meats. And it infuriates me that the published studies on health risks when eating meat include processed meats, because processed meats, as we know, are very different from a piece of simple grass-fed steak that hasn't been messed around with. And the two are not the same. So you can't really conflate them and say all meat is equal when it comes to health risk and health damage, potential health damage. So in terms of your daughter, I think there is a lot of vegan activism. And I would say that many of the documentaries that you'll find on the various channels, you've mentioned Netflix there, have been funded by vested interest. And you need to have a very careful eye when looking at them. And there are a number of websites that take apart documentaries like Game Changers, for example, line by line. And I write about that in the book. So I think that might be a useful pointer. But yes, definitely, you are doing the right thing, I think, in sticking to grass-fed pastured meat. So for me, my preference is beef and lamb, because that's reared here in the UK on grass. And actually, when looking at types of meat, in fact, any kind of food, it's not so much what we eat as what we eat has eaten. So for example, if you look at pork and chicken, these tend to be grain fed. And if they come from overseas, it's often GM corn or soya. And that changes the fat composition of the meat, because the creature is only as good as the food that it's fed, a bit like we are. So if you have a grass-fed animal that lives its life naturally outdoors grazing on grassland, their fat composition is going to be very different. So it's going to have fewer of the polyunsaturated fatty acids and more of the conjugated linolenic acid, CLA, which is shown to be an incredibly helpful nutrient for brain health and also for weight loss. So that's something that I would definitely look for. And also eating things like eggs, for example. Eggs are an amazingly good source of complete protein. And again, something that I eat on a daily basis. I tend to have 2 to 3 eggs a day. I've written a lot in the book about eggs and why they're such a good form of protein and all the different amino acids, things like choline especially, which is incredibly helpful for brain health and brain fats. I think in terms of how often you should eat meat for health purposes, I think it's a very personal choice. I probably eat meat on average once a day, maybe. Certainly every other day. I don't think I would go more than a 48-hour period without eating either meat or fish. For sure. I also eat quite a lot of dairy products. So I get my fat soluble vitamins, things like vitamin A, the retinol form of vitamin A that we need for our eyes and our brain, from things like cheese and yogurt and whole milk. So I think it depends on what you're eating around animal derived foods. So it's not just meat, because you get similar nutrition from fish, seafood and dairy. So I think look at your overall pattern of eating and whole foods. But I think on balance, eating a diverse range of foods and not being restrictive is probably the best way to go. And for me, I like to think of it in terms of ancestral eating, i.e. eating what we've always been designed to eat from the very beginning. And just a word of warning about fake meat. Fake meat is exactly that, fake. It does not contain the same nutritional composition as real meat. It contains synthetic nutrients that aren't as easily absorbed by the body. It contains pro-inflammatory seed oils rather than healthier versions of CLA or saturated fats that are hormone builders and good for overall strength and vitality. We need good levels of heme iron, which is easily absorbed, B12, the complete array of amino acids. So don't be fooled by fake meat. It's not the same. So I hope this is helpful, and I hope this helps to reassure. And I also hope that if your daughter, Claire, is vegan, that she is supplementing with all the amino acids that she needs. Looking at things like choline, for example, as I mentioned, looking at the healthy brain fats, EPA and DHA from omega-3s, You can get a limited amount from things like flaxseed, but it doesn't convert very well, particularly to DHA, which is really important for brain health. So do make sure that she is getting the vitamins and the nutrients that she needs, things like B12, for example, vitamin D3, really important for our immune system, tends to be only found in animal-derived produce. So overall, you're obviously doing the right thing for yourself, but do make sure that you look after your daughter too, and I hope that's helpful. Now, Adil has been in touch about protein. She is 53 and was diagnosed with osteopenia during menopause.
Now, I am aware that we need more protein as we age and with menopause too. But some say a minimum of 0.8 gram per kilo of body mass per meal, and others say up to 2 grams per kilo of body mass per meal. So I wondered what Liz thought about this. Also, I hear that having protein first thing as you wake up is best to boost one's metabolism. So I wonder, is it healthy to skip a meal in the end, even though fasting is really important to clean up senescent cells? And if yes, would lunch be the one to skip? I realise that ideally dinner would be the one, but I find it really difficult to never have dinner with my partner and decline invitations from friends. Obviously, having a social life is crucial too.
Oh gosh, Adil, you talk about so many important points there. Thank you. I think the first one to address is probably the amount of protein and body weight. And that really comes down to how active you are, because it's not a one size fits all. So, for example, if you're spending a lot of time in the gym, you're lifting a lot of weights, you have a very active manual labor job, for example, you're going to need more protein to sustain the body and to sustain your muscle composition. So for me, I'm looking at around 1.5 grams of protein, high quality protein, per kilo of body weight. So if I'm around 60 kilos, that's around 90 grams. That's what I aim to eat every day. So it depends. If you're similar build, similar activity level to me, then that's a kind of a rough guideline. Interesting about timing, what you ask about that. So intermittent fasting we know is really helpful for the majority of us, vast majority of us. And for most of us, it works well to skip breakfast. So we have that delay between the last mouthful at night and then the first mouthful in the morning. So should that mouthful be protein? Well, yes, I think it should. But it doesn't necessarily have to be early in the day. So for me, I get up, I do a bit of exercise. I have black coffee or black tea with a bit of creatine in it, which doesn't break a fast because it's just the pure single amino acid. And then at around 10:30, 11, I'll have some brunch and that will be protein. So I will either make myself a protein shake, which I'll add things like yogurt and kefir to. I use whole milk for that. Or I will have some Greek yogurt with nuts and seeds, maybe a few berries, or eggs. Very often I'll have a couple of scrambled eggs, a couple of boiled eggs, maybe make a cheese omelette, that kind of thing. So getting my protein in early. And I think that is a really good way to start the day, because if you break a fast with protein, you're not going to spike your insulin levels. So you're going to have a much more regulated response to sugars throughout the day. You're not going to get those highs and lows. You're not going to find that you crave sugars later in the day. So, and it also increases the satiety factor so that we feel fuller for longer and we end up not snacking, which is a really good thing. And I love the way that you say that you need to have dinner with your other half. And I think that is really important. You know, food is a really social thing. Obviously, food is fuel. We need fuel to eat and to thrive. But it is enjoyable, and life is too short not to enjoy sitting and having a great meal with family and friends. So I would say keep dinner. If dinner works for you, then definitely keep eating dinner with your loved ones, because that's what life's all about, isn't it, really? Well, I want to come back and take a closer look at that point, actually, about relationships a little later on too. But let's keep going with our physical bodies for the moment and supplements. And, you know, this is something that I talk about a lot. And I do know that there is an overwhelming amount of information on this out there.
Hi, my name is Zareen. I'm 55 and I'm recovering from endometrial cancer, which put me into surgical menopause. I'm trying to start my wellness journey with supplements, but it's a complete minefield out there. I don't know where to start and I don't know which resources to to get my information from, and also the brands and how can we formulate a supplement plan. Any advice would be helpful. Thank you.
Oh, Zareen, I really feel for you, and I do hope that your recovery is going well. The first thing I would say, actually, is that I hope that you have a good hormonal specialist who is advising you on replacing hormones as you need after surgery, because that will truly help you to feel well. But yes, supplements do play an important part, especially as we age. And I think over the years, you know, my relationship with supplements has changed. I write about this actually in the book, because when food supplements first became popular, when I first started writing about wellness and well-being, well, nearly 40 years ago, they were like the go-to thing. And I was swallowing handfuls of just general multivitamins, multimineral supplements, thinking this is going to fix everything. It doesn't really matter what we eat. And I then went completely the other way and thought, we don't need any supplements at all. We need to get everything from food. We need to cook from scratch, buy whole food, and eat literally what's on the plate. And we don't need to top up with supplements. I've now come to, I guess, a more balanced view in the middle. And that is that, of course, we need to eat well and get the majority of nutrients from food. But there are some things that we can only get through supplementation. And that's really important as we age, especially if we're coming through any form of illness. Because when we're ill, when we're sick, when we're convalescing, our body's demand for nutrients goes up because it realizes that it needs more in order to repair cells, cell damage, and to give us the better chance of recovering more quickly. So the things that I would prioritize are healthy fats, the omega-3s, look at EPA and DHA, make sure that you've got a really good fish body supplement. So that's not necessarily fish oil, but one that's come from the body of the fish, of oily fish, or krill. And actually do quite a deep dive into whether fish oil supplements or krill oil supplements are better. And I think they are both as good, as long as you buy from a good, reputable brand. And you may be somebody who likes to eat a lot of fish, but you know, for the majority of us, it's actually cheaper and easier to take an omega-3 supplement. But we know that omega-3 fats are so important for our immune system, and particularly for brain health, and particularly as we age. So warding off degenerative brain diseases, things like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, dementia, really focusing on healthy brain fats is vital. The other thing that I think we can't get enough of naturally from the diet is vitamin D3. So vitamin D3 is something that I would definitely always supplement with, and I would look for a supplement that contains it with K2, because vitamin D3 needs K2 to be highly absorbed. Depends what you're eating. Obviously, if you're eating meat, then you won't need to supplement with things like vitamin B12. Iodine is a really important nutrient, especially for metabolism, which slows as we age. Most of our iodine in this country we get from dairy, and we used to drink a lot more milk. You know, there was that slogan, wasn't there? Drink a pint of milk a day. Well, I don't know anybody who does that these days. And that's unfortunate, because that is one of the main sources of dietary iodine. Also eating eggs, really important, complete forms of protein. So a lot of it depends on what you're eating as to what you might be deficient in and what you actually might need to supplement. In terms of cost, and I think this is a really important point here, I make the distinction between value and price. Because you can buy really cheap supplements and you think, wow, this is really great value because it's so cheap. But actually, it's full of synthetically made nutrients that aren't easily absorbed by the body, if at all. So you could be swallowing something that actually is having very little or next to no impact. And that obviously isn't good value for money. Alternatively, you can buy a food grade supplement, a supplement that's been extracted from food, for example, an iodine supplement that's purely just made from seaweed, i.e. it's a food. And they may cost a little bit more, but they'll deliver far more. So they'll be much more easily absorbed by the body. And that means that they're better value for money. So I think it's really worth looking at some of the brands that say they are food sourced, and they tend to be more expensive, but you tend to need less of them. So they work out probably the same value in terms of price in the long run. So I hope that's helpful. And I think for anybody else listening, it's just worth being aware that as we age, our need for certain nutrients increases. So for example, we know that we lose collagen as we age beyond the age of 30. We're losing around 1% of our collagen each year. So that's not just about having great looking skin, that's kind of a beneficial side effect, but it's also about having really healthy, strong muscles and joints. Avoiding things like arthritic pain can be really helpful if we keep our collagen supplies high. So be aware that as we age, our requirements for certain nutrients will increase. And we also, as our metabolism slows, we absorb less nutrient from our food. And we also can lose our appetites. So we need to be making sure that we're eating nutritionally dense food. And if we're not, then also consider topping up with supplements, specifically on nutrients that we know that we might be lacking. So I hope that's a helpful reply to you, Zareen, in particular. And Yonna actually has another question here about trying one supplement at a time. And I guess this is to really monitor the difference. And yes, usually you can tell within a couple of weeks whether a supplement is making a difference to how you feel, maybe a maximum of a month. So you could buy a month's supply of something, for example, a magnesium supplement, take it every day for a month and then see how you feel. If you feel significantly better, I would carry on taking it. Other supplements, you can actually expect to see a much faster response. For example, if you're somebody who doesn't process glutathione, like me, the very first time you take a glutathione supplement, you might wake up feeling that you've got a lot more energy. So some supplements, you get an almost instant reaction from your body. Others, be prepared to allow 4 to even 6 weeks to see really longer term, whether it's worth continuing with, whether you feel better for taking it in the long run. Okay, let us pause here. But when we come back, I will be getting into lots more of your questions about our changing relationships. And that's relationships with ourselves and others.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Thank you. Well, just a little earlier, Adil brought up that point about relationships maybe suffering a bit if we're not eating together. And that's something that 54-year-old Samantha is conscious of too. She's in a relatively new relationship and has been living with her partner for the last 6 months. However, she's struggling to find the balance between looking after herself so she can be the best version of her in this relationship, while also compromising and seeing to her partner's needs too.
Firstly, getting up an hour early every morning to get that early morning light, to get fresh air, to maybe try grounding or do some skipping. Intermittent fasting is another issue. I am persisting with this because I find it really suits me, but he finds it very difficult to accept that I don't eat breakfast, lunch and dinner, and particularly I don't eat them together with him. The next one is really about sleeping, and I found that when you share a bed, it's difficult to get a full restful night's sleep. I'm a particularly light sleeper. He has a prostate issue, and so he's up during the night, and relationship tensions can also cause some detriment to our sleep. And the lastly really is about spending time on myself. I'm finding it very hard to do that, trying some new makeup rituals or putting outfits together, doing some reading. My question to Liz is, how to get the balance right?
Oh my gosh, there is so much, Samantha, to get into. So, okay, let's break this down. I think it is difficult, isn't it, when you get together with somebody, whether you are in an existing relationship or a new relationship, there's going to be different ways of living. And I think particularly when you are slightly older, you know, I've experienced this being in later life, having a new relationship. And obviously I'm with somebody who's also very settled in their ways. You know, we're not kind of growing up together as youngsters and finding our way together. We actually both have quite different ways of living, and mixing those two together, I think we have to realize that there can sometimes be compromise. First of all, I would say congratulations on what you're doing, you know, grounding, getting outside first thing. It's really important. And I used to think that that was all a little bit woo-woo, to be honest. And then I looked into the science, and it's absolutely rooted in science. You know, the negative ions that come from the electrical charge from the earth, connecting, whether it's with our hands on grass or barefoot on grass or stone, is really important. So please don't give that up just because your other half is hopefully just still snoozing in bed. If you need to get up just that little bit earlier, perhaps before he wakes and gets up, to get that in, I would seriously suggest that that's worth it for you. And I think in terms of intermittent fasting, this is also something that we touched on earlier, didn't we, when we were looking at the importance of social connectivity and sitting down and having that enjoyment factor of eating together. So a couple of things that I would say here to be helpful. Firstly, if you sit at a table with somebody, you don't necessarily have to be eating. You could be drinking, not necessarily alcohol, but you could be having a glass of kombucha or herb tea or coffee or water or glass of wine or whatever. So you are still connecting at the table, which I think is really good for relationships and for social connection. But maybe there's a halfway house here. You know, you say that you don't want to eat breakfast, lunch and dinner, but maybe you're eating lunch and dinner. You know, maybe you're skipping breakfast. Is that really such a big thing, not to sit and eat together? You know, you can have your cup of black coffee while he's eating, maybe. Hopefully that would work for you. Sleeping with somebody else in the bed. Yeah, I totally can relate to that. I'm also a very light sleeper, and these are the things that I do. Okay, so I have very close fitting earplugs. So I am really focusing on blocking out as much sound as possible. It's not so much that it won't let me hear my alarm or, you know, fire alarm or something like that, but it is enough to block out the noise of perhaps somebody getting up in the night or even possibly a snore or two, or certainly rustling bedclothes. So I think if you haven't already got earplugs, I would really suggest getting them. The best ones that I found are silicone, really comfortable to wear at night. You can get disposable ones, or if you're really going for it, you can actually have them made. So if you go to any audiology clinic in a local high street, the chances are they will be able to do a wax impression of your ear, the inner ear, and send it off to a lab, and they get special molded earplugs, which are just for you, and they fit really well, and they're super comfy, and you can wear them at night. So I would definitely do that. And also things like an eye mask, you know, one of those lovely big silk sleepy eye masks that just cover up, your eyes so that you're totally in the dark. That really also helps with depth of sleep, because if you're in deep sleep, that deep REM sleep, then you're less likely to stir during the night. And if you do find that your sleep is disrupted, you know, having a really good bedtime ritual, taking a bit of magnesium before you sleep, popping a drop of lavender oil on the pillow, which again, you might think just sounds a bit fancy, but actually has been clinically proven to keep the brain in a slightly calmer, more sedative state. So that can be really helpful. And even doing things like the continental way of sleeping, where they sleep in a double bed, but they have two single duvets. And that also helps if you're finding it difficult to be sleeping with somebody, perhaps having slept on your own for a long time. You might need a different weight of duvet. Perhaps you need a lighter one and he wants a thicker one, or vice versa. Or if somebody is pulling the duvet off you and waking you up in the night, if you've each got your own duvet, then there's less likelihood of that happening. And I think in terms of spending time on yourself, it's really important to remember that self-care is not selfish. It's really important that we look after ourselves as we age. And that's as much about protecting our own self-esteem and our confidence and our mental health as it is about protecting our physical health. If we feel better, the chances are that our immune system is improved and we're better able to care for others. So actually, self-care is the opposite of selfish. It's actually looking after ourselves so that we can be better able to be there for others. So I hope that helps reframe that in a slightly more positive perspective. Well, stay with me, Samantha, because we will come back to beauty advice in just a moment. But next, though, to Zoe, who is struggling with this particular issue.
Confidence. How to get my confidence back and find some joy in life again. Since menopause, I've struggled again with trying to find my confidence. I used to be a really confident person, really outgoing, very sociable, but it all seems to have gone. I think that's partly related to COVID, when people just stopped socialising, and now trying to get that back, trying to get people to socialise, to meet up, to do things. It just has all become a bit of a struggle. I mean, I do try and keep myself busy with different interests and hobbies. My work is fine, office administrator, you know, it's fine, it's okay, it's just a job that I do because I haven't got the confidence to try and get myself out there to try and do something that I would really like to do.
Oh my gosh, Zoe, I really feel for you, and I really wonder whether you are on HRT. And the reason that I mention that is this is something that Gabby Logan and I talked about last week, is that when we lose estrogen from our brain cells, which happens in perimenopause, usually sort of mid-40s onwards, we can end up feeling flat and a real loss of joy. And it sounds to me as though that might be what you are experiencing. And people tend to think that replacing estrogen and HRT is just about hot flushes or help with sleep or mood. But actually, that regain of a sense of purpose and confidence and joy is a very real thing. So I really hope that anybody listening, and you particularly, Zoe, aren't going to the doctor and just being fobbed off with antidepressants, because that's going to numb you even further. And maybe you are on antidepressants, and that can also just be aware that that can be very mood lowering and can just sort of numb you so that you become desensitized, really. It takes away your highs and your lows, and you end up kind of feeling nothing. So many of the women who I talk to and have spoken to over the years in my work with menopause in particular, for the Menopause Charity and other organizations, many women have said that they've regained their sense of joy and their confidence and their purpose when they regain their hormones. And I think it's also worth pointing out that because we have estrogen receptors in our brains, it can be very closely linked to anxiety. And many women find themselves becoming agoraphobic, socially withdrawn, losing confidence. They give up driving, for example, because they no longer feel confident on the roads. So I don't know whether that's your situation, Zoe, but if that is you, or if that's anybody else who's listening, I really hope that this helps to perhaps spark a conversation with your medic, with your GP, your healthcare provider, as to what you can do about it in terms of replacing that lost estrogen. In terms of other things that you can do, I think one of the things you need to make sure is that you're getting plenty of the vitality promoting nutrients. So things like eating lots of protein gives you increased muscle mass, makes you feel stronger. Having energy-giving nutrients like iron, for example. Many women become anemic. Obviously, having heavy periods, for example, can result in a loss of iron. Heme iron is very absorbable, which you get from red meat. Many of us are eating less red meat, so we're getting less absorbable iron in our diet. Egg yolks, another really good source of absorbable iron. Looking at things like B12, again, if you're eating more plant-based foods, you might be deficient in vitamin B12, which is really important for energy. Even things like the healthy fats, I've talked about these before, the omega-3s, the EPA and the DHA, again, connecting to pathways in the brain that give us a bit of get up and go. And make sure that you're getting good sleep, because sleep is really important part of our circadian rhythm, again, giving us that energy. And you might find that having a micro stressor in the morning to give you that tiny little cortisol spike first thing. We tend to think of cortisol as being the bad guy because it's the stress hormone. But actually, we need tiny micro stresses to give us that get up and go first thing. So for me, I advocate cold showers. Now, don't panic. I'm not saying you've got to go full on and have a massively cold shower first thing. But what I do is I have my shower in the morning, and then at the end of the shower, I just turn the tap down to cold. And I swish my feet and I use the shower head going up my body, end up with it on the back of my neck, on my chest, on my face. It's very bracing. And I have to tell you, genuinely, there is not a single day that goes by when I don't think, oh, am I really going to do this? You never quite get used to it. But I always do, because I know that I'm going to feel so much better for it. And it's that little micro cortisol stress that makes us feel energized. It gives us a dopamine boost an hour or two later, so that we start to have this surge of happy chemicals, the endorphins in our brain. And that, I think, could be something that is potentially very helpful. It's cheap and easy. Everybody can do it. Obviously, if you've got health issues or you've been told by your GP to avoid cold showers, then please don't. But for most of us, it's a very simple fix and a very easy way to give ourselves an emotional lift. Zoe, you talk about not really enjoying your job, about it just being a job. You're just turning up. And I think it's important to remember that there are choices. And actually having a really cold, hard look at the things that you genuinely love and are passionate about that fire your thoughts and your emotions. Maybe there is a job switch, or maybe if it's not necessarily in your paid employment, maybe it's something else outside of that that you can spend more time being occupied with. And I know for many people who have a bit more time on their hands, then volunteering can be an amazing way to get back into the community and connect with a passion that you have, whether you're mentoring somebody else, teaching them, maybe you're taking up a new hobby, maybe you're linking up with other people, whether it's something simple like a book club or a knitting circle or a baking society or whatever it is, then there's lots of ways, I think, to find new interests and connect with people who might have a similar passion. I think it's really important as we age, actually, to drill down into what our passion is and our purpose and think, why am I here? You know, what's it all about? What do I really enjoy? What would I miss most in my life? And that's often a clue as to what we should perhaps be doing more of. But I think midlife is also a time to perhaps feel a bit braver about what we might like to do and realize that our life on this earth is finite. And how do we actually want to spend our second half? How do we actually want to spend our time? Who do we want to be with? How do we want to live? And sometimes we're scared to step out of the perceived narrative of who we should be or how we should be living and actually realize that we do have options. All of us have options. Depends what your choices are. It depends what your priorities are, what you need in life. And I think taking some time to really sit and think about that really carefully, maybe talk it over with a friend or maybe with a therapist or a counsellor, but just write some thoughts down on paper and review it. Give yourself an appraisal, give yourself a life appraisal and figure out how you want to spend the second half of your life to find that passion, to find that purpose. Okay, so as promised, we will finish with some beauty chat. And do you know, I think that beauty, it's not a vanity project. Beauty is the icing on the cake. When it comes to wellness and well-being, it's an outward reflection of what's going on inside. It's actually a very good barometer of how the body is coping on a cellular level, how our skin looks, how our body is behaving. And it is really important for self-esteem. If we catch a glance of ourselves in the mirror and we are happy with what we see, it is automatically going to give us a bit of a boost. Whereas I think we shouldn't be obsessed about how we look. I think looking well is actually all part of feeling well. So on that note, we've had this email from Emma, who lives on the Great Ocean Road in Victoria, Australia. Wow, I can just imagine your view, Emma. Anyway, you say, active ingredients, I am so confused. I try my best to live healthily and sensibly. Retinols and retinoids and vitamin C serums and hyaluronic acids are everywhere at the moment. I found myself Googling brands to buy some of these products, and on reading their blurbs, I feel I need all of them. Yeah, I know how you feel. Then I look at my own skin, which is excellent for my age, and I query if I'm actually being sucked in. Well, I think there is a very interesting point to that. You know, how do you want your skin to look? And I think if you're happy in your skin, we don't need to have super smooth plastic looking, almost this trend for what dermatologists are calling glass skin that smooths out every line and wrinkle. It's actually not very healthy because it's often degrading the transepidermal barrier of the skin, which controls moisture loss and sets us up to become more highly pigmented and more photosensitive, more light prone, and can later in life increase skin wrinkling. So you do need to be careful when looking at things like retinols, for example, not to overdo it, and facial peels and glycolic acids and all those things that do literally strip away the surface of the skin. Very helpful for encouraging that kind of shiny glow. But in the long term, who knows? We haven't been using them for long enough to know the long-term damage in terms of decades and more. So my advice would be to steer the moderate line. What I do is I use a bit of retinol. I don't use it every night. I use it maybe two or three times a week. I use quite a low dose. I love ingredients like azelaic acid and niacinamide, which help with skin brightening and pigmentation. I actually look after my skin from within by taking collagen supplements. I take collagen capsules. I eat high protein foods because that's also going to reflect in my skin. I make sure I take fish oil supplements, omega-3s. Again, that's really helpful, having healthy fats to create strong, healthy skin cells. So there are certain ingredients that are very helpful. Vitamin C, for example, we know is very good for brightening the skin. If you have an issue with pigmentation, for example, maybe living in Australia, then that's something that you might have an issue with, maybe having a bit more sun damage possibly, then they could be really useful. I mean, you say here, you finish off your email by saying, in a nutshell, are we blessed to have science of today that allows us to hone in on the very best products that allow us to achieve results that our ancestors could only have wished for? Or is the science a hype? And we would be better to seek products from a natural living world in their original form to help us. I think that's a very deep and interesting question. I think there are some benefits of modern science. And I guess it depends how far back you want to turn the clock. You know, how young do you want to look? Because there is certainly that option, either surgically or through Botox and fillers and stem cell transplants and microneedling and all sorts of things. Actually, if we don't want our skin to age, we now have the option to not have it age. But is that really what we want? Or is that just something that society is telling us that we want? And who is selling us that story? Because there's usually a vested interest at the end. There's usually some kind of financial agenda. So I think the first thing to do is to be happy with where you are in your life and what your skin is looking like. For me, it's actually about healthy skin. It's about resolving any issues, sorting out any areas of concern, such as rosacea, psoriasis, eczema, hyperpigmentation, you know, the things that can really bother somebody in terms of a skin issue where you just want to run away and hide because you're so concerned about the look of your skin. But if skin is healthy and well, I don't think we should be obsessing about every wrinkle. But I do think having a moderate approach to using those ingredients, which these days are not expensive. You know, you can find good quality formulations with low dose retinol, azelaic acid, for example, vitamin C serums. They don't cost the earth. And I think they do bring genuine benefit for the skin. But it's a very interesting question that you ask, and I think one that probably we should return to again as part of a wider discussion. Well, I cannot tell you how much I appreciate every single one of you who's been in touch with specific questions, and indeed all of you who share your own stories on Instagram after listening to specific podcast episodes. And if I didn't answer your question today, don't worry, because I am going to be continuing to answer them with my guests over the coming months. So do please send me an email, or better yet, a voice note. Isn't it lovely to hear people's real voices? Love that. And you can send that to podcast@lizardwellbeing.com. And as ever, we can continue chatting on Instagram. You will find me personally on there, @lizardme. All the team, of course, on @lizardwellbeing. And I'm so interested to hear what you think about my book. I do write about all these things and more, and drill down into some of the science. And I'd love to continue the conversation, talking about how we can all achieve a better second half. And of course, my book is now available to buy. Well, I'll be back next week, and I'm going to be chatting to a fascinating neuroscientist. So do make sure that you're back here. You can just click the follow button wherever you're listening to this podcast right now, and then all new episodes will arrive automatically, as if by magic, on your device as soon as they are available. Until the next time we chat, go very well. Goodbye. The Lizelle Wellbeing Show is presented by me, Lizelle, and is produced by Anushka Tate for Fresh Air Production, with additional production support from Ellie Smith.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.